Adobe Acrobat Studio, so brand new.
Show me all the things PDFs can do.
Do your work with ease and speed.
PDF Spaces is all you need.
Do hours of research in an instant
with key insights from an AI assistant.
Pick a template with a click.
Now your prezzo looks super slick.
Close that deal? Yeah, you won.
Do that, doing that, did that, done. Now you can do that with Acrobat. Now you can do that with the all-new Acrobat.
It's time to do your best work with the all-new Adobe Acrobat Studio.
Abercrombie denim is everything right now. Denim should feel like this. Confident, easy, like your butt has never looked better. If you didn't know, Abercrombie's Curve Love denim went viral for eliminating waist gap, and it's still a game changer. Between that and their classic fits with a straighter line from waist to hip, the perfect denim does exist. Shop Abercrombie Denim in the app, online, and in-store.
Hey, it's Charlie. Today's episode comes from a live session that I hosted last week at NYU, where I also teach songwriting and production. I was in a room of music students chatting with Joe Keery, aka Joe, D-J-O, and we revisited his third album, The Crux, on the eve of The Crux Deluxe, which just dropped on Friday. Our aim was to decode this album because it's a chance to hear how one of today's most adventurous artists thinks about making an album, the kind of work that holds together as a complete statement, even while pulling from many different sounds. Here's my conversation with Joe, live at NYU. Welcome to Switched on Pop. I'm songwriter Charlie Harding, and this is Joe Keery.
I'm Joe Keery. Hey, how's everyone doing? Good? Cool.
I'm so happy that you are joining us here at NYU.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Since we last checked in about a year and a half ago, we spoke about your album Decide. We talked about your huge hit Back to Chicago. And since, like, just the most enormous amount of things have happened. It's been a huge year for you. Back in April,
it's been crazy.
You released The Crux, your third studio album, as Joe, D-J-O. Then in June, Iron came out with your bandmates Post Animal.
Yep.
Your first record with them since 2017.
Crazy.
The film Pavements recently dropped. The final season of Stranger Things is coming in November. The film Cold Storage is forthcoming. All of that alongside a massive world tour. And just this week, you've dropped three singles every single day of the week. One, like, a half an hour ago. Okay. Lots has happened. But I want to stay with The Crux.
Sure.
It really stands out. And I want to make sure I get this right. You've described it as a hotel for people at a crossroads?
Yeah, that was kind of the concept that we, when we were putting together the visual stuff, that we kind of stumbled into. I was working on it with my friend from Post Animals named Jay Kirschland, and we did all the visuals together. And we were hoping to do some sort of maximalist homage to albums from the 70s. I think Supertramp was a really big influence on us. You know, they have some amazing album covers. If you don't know their covers, oh my God, they're so great.
What's happening in this hotel?
Everything. Yeah.
Everything's happening.
It's exactly what I said. I guess the crossroads of the album for me felt like a real... I was in this kind of fluid part of my life where I kind of was living in a bunch of different places and going from job to job, kind of a result of all the things that you mentioned at the beginning of this.
You've lived in a lot of hotels.
I've lived in a lot of hotels. And
temporarily in cities all over the world.
Exactly. And so it felt like a good way to maybe kind of capture what the theme, you know, because the music is about a bunch of different things, but what the theme behind the process for everything was.
I mean, this is definitely like an album to me. You know, it's like, it's got architecture, it's got a lot of different moods that need to be experienced, I feel like, as a whole.
Thanks.
And I would like to listen to the entire thing back to back altogether.
Yeah.
But we're not going to do that tonight.
That would take forever,
It'd take a little while.
Well, it would be 45 minutes. It wouldn't be that long.
But I want to stick to the guiding metaphor of The Crux. And tonight, what I'd like to do is go through a little tour of this hotel, if you will.
Cool. Love this.
So we'll check in at Lonesome State of Mind.
Okay.
We're going to stop in the lobby mirror with Basic being Basic. We're going to drift into the dream suite of Potion. We're going to wander down a bit of a diversion, if you will, to the hallway of a new single called Carry the Name. And finally, we'll check out the rooftop view of The Crux.
Great.
Okay.
Love it.
Great.
Have fun.
So let's get into some music.
Okay.
I think this is a great opportunity to really understand how to create a work that is both very cohesive and yet not confined, that draws from a ton of different places, but creates a singular voice. I think that's what we're going to hear tonight.
Thanks a lot. Thanks. Thanks.
Let's start with the opening track. Lonesome is the State of Mind.
Okay.
My dog is at my house again, but I live somewhere else. I swear I've had this dinner before. I know I've heard that song. My future's not what I thought. I think I thought it wrong. It's one on one.
I have to say, it's also been like kind of a second since I've listened to this, yeah. So it's cool to hear it in this room with all of you guys that's here, too, so go Sox also. Yeah, sorry.
In New York City, how dare you?
Oh, sorry,
my gosh, watch
that.
Out.
Sorry.
If the doors are locked, I think we're safe. How does Lonesome serve as a check-in point for our listeners?
It's kind of like setting the stage, I guess. It's a bit of like a breakup record and a bit of a, so yeah, kind of setting the stage of where I'm at. I think this song, where it fits with everything else, is kind of a midpoint, maybe. It has like a little of a bunch of different things, especially later on in the song. It kind of has sort of a quieter intro verse and then kind of an upbeat chorus, I'd say. And then the outro is kind of blown out a little bit more.
All right, we're going to get there.
Okay.
This is, I think, profound, though, because so the last time I spoke with you, I was really uncertain of who was going to walk in the room.
Sure.
I mean, I had primarily known you first through film and television,
mm-hmm.
and all of your characters are not as nice as you are. And I was like, I hope he's going to be a nice guy. It turns out we're back, so I think it went well.
I passed.
But I was also like, or is he going to be Joe, DJO, the mustachioed, wig-wearing, sunglasses-wearing persona?
Mm-hmm.
And then you show up. And the first lines we hear, you're saying, like, it's immediately personal.
Yeah.
We've sort of let go of the costume.
Yeah. That was definitely an effort to do that. And I think I was trying to do that before, but just trying to do it even more now, just, like, to use the art form as a way to process what I was going through in my life. And, yeah, that's where I was at, I guess. I was being very literal about things.
There's some very gutting lyrics here. The one that really hit me the hardest, such a plain-spoken sort of domestic lyric. My dog is at my house again, but I live somewhere else.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh. I think there's a matter of factness about... you can hear Paul McCartney all over my music. I love the guy. I think his music is genius. And there's something very, I say, matter of fact, where he's kind of like laying it out for it to be interpreted how people may interpret it. And that's something me and Adam talk about all the time. About the lyrics, but also about like the way something is performed, doing something almost plainly in a way.
Hmm.
So I feel like that lyric maybe falls into that bucket of being like, what's like the simplest version of this? Or
I mean, there's heartbreak, but then there's being dislocated from your animal.
That's pretty sad.
And so we begin from a place of lonesomeness, of a place that needs healing. And I think you sort of hinted at, like, maybe this song feels like it's a little bit starts in the middle. Maybe there's little moments of feelings of resolution. I want to jump into the second verse.
Sure.
But now I take the train. It's good enough for me. Time it takes an itch. It grinds it clean. Turns a scar to a seam. I've shot
this lyric right there. Time it takes an edge and grinds it clean, turns a scar to a seam.
Proud of that one. That one's good. I like that lyric. Yeah.
It's good to own the things. Yeah.
It is good to own the things that you're... I think that's a good lesson. But yeah, something that, you know, is a searing pain one day slowly gets a little bit more dull and you get more... It can be used to help you, I guess.
Hmm.
You know, if you have a scar from jumping off a roof, you're like, well, I'm not going to do that again, you know?
There's progression in this song. We go from driving a truck, now you're riding trains.
Mm-hmm.
Suggests that there's been a lot of movement and displacement
in
life. And I think that we get some sort of sense of like, this album will take us towards resolution. There's like little hints of it. I think particularly in the outro that you were speaking about.
Yeah.
I think I'll take it, show that kid to the door.
almost like Edward Scissorhands or something, that section to me. It's like Philip Glass, like...
I was hearing almost like Pachelbel's Canon, yeah, very Baroque.
Definitely. Absolutely. I think the chord changes are literally that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why are we going Baroque now?
What? I don't know. I played a lot of George Winston on the piano when I was a young guy, and my mom played that Winter album from George Winston a ton, and it honestly
is
deeply,
well,
deeply within me. Yeah, and then also I feel like it's totally lifting from my roots with Post Animal, like kind of a big, explosive, bombastic. Mm. Something. Another thing I learned from those guys is like you can have a section be one thing, and then you don't necessarily have to go back, you know? Taking somebody on like a bit of a ride. And that's always something with an album that I love, something that is eclectic and touches on different influences and is exciting and kind of unexpected. Mm. Just keeps me listening, I guess, as simple as that. So trying to make those choices every opportunity that you can.
There's a lot of composed sections in this music. In fact, yeah, in many ways, the outro is a callback to the intro,
yeah,
where we have this sort of counterpoint synth thing happening. And you're like, okay, we hear it in a very different context.
Sure.
A lot has happened.
Yeah.
I just want to point out also in the sort of bridge outro, you introduce a great songwriting cliche and then immediately subvert it. I was one, two was nice, 29 and misaligned. Counting is fine. You know, there's plenty of great songs.
I love
that
count.
Have a good count. You can count. But, you know, I'm like, I'm waiting for the three, and you take us right to 29.
Yeah, yeah.
29 misaligned. So this album sort of feels like a life audit.
Yeah, exactly that. Mm-hmm. Taking it as a way to chop things up and kind of rethink it and relive it, memorialize it maybe. Yeah. And, like, also speak it out loud sometimes helps get through something. Sometimes you're like, this is the last thing I'd want to say. Or something I didn't get a chance to say.
Let's talk about one of the things that might be uncomfortable to say.
Sure.
I want to move on to the next song on the record.
Okay.
Which is Basic Being Basic.
Sure, yeah.
Let's take a listen.
Okay. Get food. Barely eat. Every bite just kept me glued to my seat. I worried. Even cried. How'd it feel to take the light from my life? Bad habit. Even worse, 50-50, I'm a sucker for looks. Asked for it, here it is. A quick example, cause you wanted the hits. I think you're scared of being basic. So we go from lonesomeness to, you know, your verse here, get food, barely eat. It's both like disaffected and entirely snarky. Yeah, for sure.
It's not playing nice guy.
No, and like I feel like I think of myself as kind of like a nice person, and so it was fun in the song to be like throw that out the window and be like, this is how I feel.
Who are we speaking to?
Someone in my life. I won't say who, but it just is like it came out very naturally. I wrote this song in Atlanta when I was living down there and working down there, and wrote it's not very complicated really at all, and wrote all the parts and was just walking around the neighborhood, and the lyrics were just like da 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 da, and then it was pretty much done. And it just like felt very, very, when something flows through you so fast and you edit it and then you don't put it out, I was just kind of like, what's the point of anything if you can't do that? Even though it is uncomfortable and sort of like, it is a side of me that does exist. And it felt like an important part to share on this record that kind of, I was trying to bare myself a little bit more. I felt like, okay, this is also a side of yourself. Maybe not one that you're proud of, but one that's, you know, true to the whole thing, I think. You get hurt by people and then you want to lash out and hurt them back, I guess.
Well, it's a very satisfying kind of song to have in the world. Where it's like, oh, that song is saying something I feel, but I don't like saying out loud to other people.
Yeah.
So it takes a certain bravery to say, I'm gonna say these tough things that...
Yeah. I think also this song is very easily... It sounds kind of like I'm trying to make some like cultural statement, which I'm really not. I'm not trying to say anything about like everyone as a whole. And I've had a lot of people ask me like, so like, what are you trying to say about society? That's all. I'm like, I'm just like, it's actually so simple and cut and dry. It's actually just like about my life. And it can be interpreted however you think, I guess.
I heard all kinds of other ways of thinking about it. Yeah. Maybe we should just completely move on. But I think pointing out that this is a song that I think reflects, there's many ways of hearing it. So I think it's still valuable. I'd like to share some of the ways that I was hearing it.
Absolutely. I'd love to hear it.
When we move into our second chorus.
Yeah.
The chorus changes, takes on a slightly different character.
Pretend how basic.
Tell me
Basic shuffle numbers, pointing fingers, ditching chats, and different apps. That's basic.
Yeah.
Now, maybe this is the one person, but I see this all over the place. Being like, just get off your phone.
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I mean, I do it also, but it's also just about someone. It's like so specific. Yeah.
In your second verse, you sing,
I don't want your money. I don't care for fame. I don't want to live a life where that's my big exchange. I want simple pleasures, friends who have my back. Everyone has secrets, but not everyone can fool a man like that. It set me reeling.
I don't want your money. I don't care for fame. I don't want to live a life where that's my big exchange. I want simple pleasures, friends who have my back. Everyone has secrets, but not everyone can fool a man like that.
Yeah.
This I can start to see as getting very personal.
Yeah, definitely. And then again, that's also that ties in really well to the end of the record too. So it's like,
yeah,
this is like completely unintentionally is some foreshadowing. It's like writing the record. There was no order. It was just like a big think tank. Like I think so that song Carry the Name that just came out has the same first lyric as one of the other songs. I think it's Lonesome maybe.
Oh, interesting.
Completely unintentional. Didn't notice until today. And it's like, because maybe they were written around the same time. It I don't know. It's just like, just letting it kind of go. And then as the album starts to like shape itself, you do start to notice these things that sort of like this, me talking about my friends, and then later in the album, that's a big kind of point that is made. It's just kind of nice.
When we first met, yeah. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah.
I very boldly was just like, I don't like vanity projects. I didn't want to talk to you originally.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's good. I love that.
And I was like, but then I listened to the record and the record was really good.
It's nice.
And, but a lot of your records are dealing with, and your music project, I think, very much is dealing with what does it mean to be a public person?
Yeah.
Right? And
for sure,
there's all the kinds of expectations that come with that. And I'm hearing, and I think we're going to see through the arc of the rest of the record, the like, who are you supposed to be as a musician whose job it is to perform vulnerability while also having to protect having some kind of private life without disclosing everything?
Yeah, I get like the thing that I learned from End to Beginning is like that was a super, it didn't feel like a song that would really relate to many people when I was working on it. It was a super specific song about my relationship to going back to, honestly, very similar to this. I went to a theater school in Chicago, walking the streets of Chicago. You're like, oh man, remember when me and Jack did this, or I went to a party there and Zoe, you know, blah, 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 whatever. It's about that. And through the process of writing that song and it kind of connecting to people so deeply, I set out on this record with the same sort of thesis, I guess, of just like at every point, just trying to make it as personal to myself as possible.
I want to pause for just a second so we can get back to End of Beginning into people's ears for a second.
Sure.
So for some of us, we're remembering where we were and when did this blow up? 2023?
Yeah,
22?
I think so. 2020.
Right? But it came out, what, 2022 and took a year or two
exactly.
to have its
exactly.
moment.
Yeah, yeah.
Right. So some of us are remembering, oh, I remember where I was when this was all over my phone. But,
more
explicitly, you're probably remembering, I remember when I went back to my high school after having not been there.
Everybody's right. got that. Yeah. We're not so different. Everybody's the same. Not everybody's exactly the same, but we all
are you, saying that we're all so basic?
I am so basic. I think, I don't know.
That's the other way I was wondering if the song was going, was like any sort of, well, you have this trick that you do in a lot of your songs, on your productions, where, maybe the trick is the wrong word, but this choice where a lot of your verses are these sort of like telephone-like vocals, a little distorted.
Definitely on this.
Right? So when we hear the verse, actually both in Lonesome and in Basic.
Absolutely.
Get food, barely eat. Every bite just kept me glued to my seat.
But then when we get to the chorus, there's like this opening.
I think you're scared of being basic.
That, I mean, that also is a function of knowing that we're going to play these live and feeling as though I didn't want to like rely on I've done like massive stacks of vocals and it sounds amazing. And then you go to play live, you're like, oh God, like this is...
Oh my gosh, right.
So I was challenging myself to find my own voice and just really lean on a solo vocal as much as possible, because a lot of the music that I love, it's just one person singing generally. I mean, obviously there's massive exceptions and stuff, but trying to like be... Exactly, it's another layer of just tearing back the layers and trying to just be like, okay, this might be a little risky here, but this is the vocal you're getting.
It works on so. Okay, so this, I love this. There was a very practical reason. There's a taste reason.
Yeah.
Especially in the song Before Unlonesome, one of the things I hear is there's sort of like a revelation that's also occurring.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me think of the Bruce Springsteen adage that Jack Antonoff constantly repeats, which is that you want to sing blues in your verse and gospel in your chorus.
Oh, whoa, I don't
right?
know that.
So blues, that. All the details of your life, and then when you get to the chorus, you can just say, hallelujah, like whatever the message is, doesn't have to be as detailed. That's just,
write that little down. Hallelujah, thank you, Jesus. But you're right also about the ethos of... basic too. It is also kind of like a challenge. Like, why don't you be as absolutely lame and basic as you can possibly be? Because guess what? If you're even trying to be cool, or in that is so uncool, I guess. That is also kind of how I was feeling about that song. Like,
do you have that fear about releasing music? Is it too basic? Is it?
Yeah, I think everybody does. Everybody has that fear about anything. About like you walk out of your house and you're like, do I look cool? I like will change my clothes like 50 times sometimes. I'm like, what am I doing? What am I doing? Yeah, kind of like a challenge to be as cringe as possible, sort of.
How does it feel to play? You, I guess in your other career, you play characters. Is it easy for you to sort of lean into these? Do you feel like that aids you in being able to lean into different emotional states of, yeah, I want to be the nice guy, but I'll also be the person who's going to say some cutting...
Yeah, I guess like it's important to like realize that you're not just one thing, and you can be. It's really easy for me to sort of tell them, like, this is who I am. This is the person that I am. Where we're still kind of like figuring it out. You know, I'm in my, you know, now mid-30s, and I still feel like, oh, okay, this is a part of me that I have to kind of like sort out, or this is a part of me that I have to accept. And you don't really, you're never kind of really arriving, at least not yet, so...
We've been presented with some different kinds of characters so far. We've been going through this hotel, and the album goes in so many different directions. And when we go to the fourth song, Potion, we enter a really different domain.
I'll try for all of my life just to find someone who leaves on the light.
I love that song. Oh, man. What do you want to know?
It's a real palate cleanser.
Totally.
It's a real positive song. Right. Yeah. So we've really shifted emotions. We've shifted soundscapes. We've gone from heavy guitars. The drums have lightened up. We've gone to acoustic guitars. This is definitely like a guitar player dream kind of song.
Yeah.
You know, immediately I'm like, oh, how's he doing those
things? Yeah, sure.
Like, oh, he's playing Dadgad tuning.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Now, and as soon as you start unlocking someone's tuning, you're like, oh, so he listens to Jimmy Page, and he listens to, you know, that's like the Jimmy Page tuning that was done on Black Mountainside and on Kashmir. And it's a common like Irish folk tune tuning. At the same time, I'm hearing like Lindsey Buckingham, 12-string guitar. Oh, and we're getting Mellotron.
Mm-hmm.
So it's putting us in a lot of different places. Why did you want to take us here?
Man, I got obsessed with Travis picking. I was like, found out about that. And like you said, the different tunings. And I was in Canada and so bored, no friends. And I just was playing a lot of guitar. I think this and Fly were written at the same time. I was just moving up and down the neck and figuring stuff out and just taking capos on and off. And yeah, I just felt like... there's something really kind of like Sesame Street and it's kind of like Harry Nilsson also about this song. And like, for me, it's like a very, very visual song. I feel like I can see, there's this artist named Ed Emberley that I loved as a little kid. And I feel like I see little Ed Emberley drawings when I'm listening to this song. And what I really love about music, I'm not like I can sit down and if I try hard enough, I can generally get to something, but what I love is just how things are all slotted together. And I feel like this song is all that, you know, all these little bits that are you know, the timing and the weird changes. Time signatures. Yeah, and then the vocal, and all these like different little parts that work in conjunction with each other. And I love that. That gives me like the, it's like organizational pleasure or something like that. The same way that like someone, it feels really good to like have your apartment clean. This, I feel like, is a similar feeling. It feels like, ooh, everything's in its place. It feels really good. Yeah.
Well, then all of that is serving, you're creating this dreamlike space, right? You're saying, when I wake up at 3 a.m, another songwriting cliche, right? I woke up in the morning.
Yeah.
But you take us not in deeper into that cliche. You take us to witching hour, too strong, like a witch. I need my potion.
What the hell does that mean?
What does it mean? Where are we going?
I don't know. That just came to me. A lot of it, a lot of the time, it's just like it just will come to you and you're just like, wow, that's kind of weird, huh? I guess I'm going to follow this and where will it lead? Well, I know that the chorus of this song was different. The vocals, I forget the different, I don't remember what the words were, but was kind of searching for what that might be.
What it reminds me of, if you're drawing on these sort of 1970s references,
yeah,
like Led Zeppelin would write about like Tolkien.
Yeah.
Right? And so like, fantasy world is available sure. to us in songwriting.
Sure.
And so this witching hour, you carry on that metaphor, I need my potion. But then there's just like this really, again, back to the first song, this sort of plain, domestic, very simple, but very loving lyric. Mm. I'll try for all my life just to find someone who leaves on the light for me.
It's nice. It's like nice to hear. Yeah. And I feel like I was looking for that at the time. That was just me in my life, I guess. Like, I had lost this partnership in my life, and I was kind of like reaching out for something too. So,
You're maybe a little down on yourself in the next verse. Mr. Magic and the Trapdoor Ladies, big walk, no talk, glitz and glamour doesn't age like wine does. I'm counting on love.
Yeah. Wine gets better. Glitz and glamour does not. I had big walk, no talk in my little journal for so long. Because I'll have like, I feel like a lot of people will have just a journal. You just jot down this turn of phrase, you know, just funny things that people say. And that was one that I was like, I wonder if this could work. And it just kind of worked for the section. Yeah.
And in contrast with this feeling of like, the desire in this song is just this plain, I want someone to leave the light on for me.
Yeah.
And going out big glitz and glam, all the big talk, big block.
Yeah.
That's not it.
Yeah. And it's not an intellectual process at all, songwriting for me. It's like, I'm really instinctual about the whole thing, and I'm just like following whatever is inside of me, and sometimes it works, and I will definitely go through multiple series of editing, you know, songs, but I'm generally like casting around in the abyss for something and waiting, kind of like we're working, and we're like putting all the parts together, and then if it like hooks in, it's like vroom, and then write it really quick, as fast as you can write it. I'd say any song that I really, really love kind of was done that way. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it takes a long time. You're like waiting forever. You're like, man, I love this song. I know the melody. I know what it could be about. I like have the whole thing, kind of the idea, but the words, it just is not happening. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that just like takes a long time. I know like Crux, which was song 45. It was song 45 forever. I was like, what the fuck is song 45? Song 45, come on, song 45. Like, gotta get the lyrics to song 45. And, you know, one day it just was like, it's always also when you're doing something, you're like doing the dishes. You're like, oh my God, yeah. And then try to keep...
Well, this is the thing that I find very frustrating about you.
Yeah.
You're very effective at using all the free time in life to be creative.
That's when your brain gets a chugging and you're like, running or walking a lot or talking to yourself a lot.
I just, this is a bit from our previous conversation. when we last met up, you talked about much of your previous record was written in trailers while on set.
Mm-hmm.
Now, while you're on set, there's a lot of time where people are killing time.
Absolutely. So much time. Wasted time.
There's all kinds of things that people could be doing.
Yeah.
And especially, I mean, you're on one of the biggest budget shows on the planet, which means that they can pull actors for longer periods of time and have you sit around.
Yeah, yeah.
There's not a big budget. They're like, fly out one day, that's it, right?
Yeah, so yeah.
So you have all this free time, and you know, you could be sitting there being basic, scrolling on your phone, and you know, we all do a bit of that.
I definitely do some of that.
But you're also like, I'm sitting here making an album in my trailer.
Yeah, it doesn't feel like that, though, when you're doing it. You're kind of just like fighting the urge to not do something like that, or I procrastinate so hard, just as much as anyone else.
But like leaving a guitar out, so that you can procrastinate with a guitar.
That's a great idea.
An incredibly effective... I'm sorry. This is like, obviously, I'm just directly speaking to all my students right now.
And also, like, spending my money, I was, like, very tight. I just was like, I'm not going to spend this money. And the second that I was like, you know what? I found this piece of equipment or something that I really like, and I spend so much of my time working on this, like, do it. Get this thing that you are really inspired by.
And you also,
you're going to get stuff from this thing.
Oh, sure. The right guitar. I mean, obviously, that guitar is going to inspire me forever. That's very important. I could tell you forever, but we can talk about it later.
I didn't even see her back there. Whoa.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Also, this piano. Holy smokes. Very cool. I'm in a piano. I'm not a very good piano player, but we were talking back there. I just got a piano and very excited to have it kind of. I play piano, obviously, on this, but like all as a means to an end. But I'm very excited to kind of like start writing songs on the piano a little bit more. Like some were done that way on this album, but to have it around to be like lazy Saturday, sit down and just
Yeah, and I just want to. I want students to know that, like, yeah, you know, in a second we're going to turn the story about me because I have to talk about this guitar. This guitar is very
love
important.
It.
And you also wrote a song about me, so yeah. we're gonna get there in a
I
second.
Did, yes, yeah. Of course I did.
But I want to impart that your second record, made in like unusual conditions that might have been hopefully nicer looking than a dorm room, but maybe no better, with
similar
like a laptop and an interface and a MIDI controller.
Yeah, boom. Focusrite Scarlett 2x whatever.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah, right.
I also like will lose it all the time. I opened a bag. I have like like two, three of them. Like, oh God, close that bag.
Okay, so you're I talk in my songwriting course that it's really important that you need to throw yourself into the path of creativity.
Yeah,
this is a Jeff Tweedyism.
Yeah,
he's one of the few really good writers about the creative process.
Yeah, and completely.
So
his
it
book's
just
great
in your trailer, having the thing ready, open to go, yeah. So you can procrastinate writing. It's
yeah.
Like, oh, I'm accidentally productive.
And like for this record, for sure, it was like having an acoustic guitar around because I had not forever. And I went to Old Style Guitars in LA and I bought a Recording King that was like kind of random, and I brought it to Calgary and it got destroyed actually because of the temperature changes. So I cracked the bridge. When I brought it back, it was like,
no.
Still have it. It's sort of like, save me. It's like this like destroyed guitar. But having that around, like half these songs wouldn't have happened. I could have been just like, I don't know, you could go out, you could do this, you could do that. And I made an effort every day to just sit down and just finish something. Because another thing that I'm sure all of you feel, it's like you feel the need to like do something really profound all the time. I'm always like stuck, and I feel like really trapped by that feeling of like, it's not the perfect lyric, it's not this. And thinking of it as like here's the experiment. I have this whole month. I'm going to get like one idea every day. And even if it's like 15 seconds and it's just, and that's it, it counts. And that really released some stuff for me too. Because then you also just get into the habit, playing more, and that helped me too.
Introducing the new Dell AI PC, powered by the Intel Core Ultra Processor. It helps do your busy work for you, so you can fast forward through editing images, designing presentations, generating code, debugging code, summarizing meeting notes, finding files, managing your schedule, responding to James's long emails. Whew. Leaving all the time in the world for the things you actually want to do. No offense, James. Get a new Dell AI PC at dell.co.uk/AI-PC. Dell, how those ahead stay ahead.
If I get my kid a phone, I'll be able to keep in touch with him all the time.
He'll be on it all the time.
He could walk to school by himself.
She could see something she shouldn't.
He could chat with grandma.
Friends. Trolls.
They can access anything on the internet.
They can access anything on the internet.
So, should I give my kid a phone?
Growing up with phones isn't always easy. Introducing EE Safer Sims. Sims that help moderate usage and shield harmful content on any smartphone. Choose EE Safer Sims. Only on the UK's best network.
To verify best network, see ee.co.uk/claims.
Amazon brings the UEFA Champions League.
Oh,
Unbelievable!
With Tuesday's unmissable match.
Enchantingly wonderful!
World-class players.
Salah!
What a strike!
Incredible drama.
And Haaland!
History in the making.
Rice with take two!
The UEFA Champions League. It's on Prime.
Maybe the moment has passed, but I'm going to steal the microphone for a second. Because I know you really like guitars.
We were talking about it backstage.
So I have to tell you about this guitar, but again, it's only because it's instructive to people and because I want to tell everybody about my guitar.
Yes, please.
So it's like a Gibson L4 from the early 1950s. And I found it in my local guitar shop where I grew up in Maine. And there were, actually, my friend Jenny found it for me.
Wow.
Because she knows that I have a guitar problem. Yeah. So she's like, you're coming home to Maine.
So she's an enabler.
She's an enabler.
She's not helping.
No. Well, it depends who you are.
Yeah.
And she says, on the wall of this guitar shop, these four beautiful archtop guitars. Mm. And I know you have just come from California. You don't have a guitar with you. You need a guitar. I'm like, you know me well. Anyway, long story short, the guy who owned this guitar, he owned four archtop guitars. He was in his, I think, early 80s.
Oh, wow.
And he said, I'm going to consign all my guitars because I want to learn to play violin.
Amazing.
He had spent his whole life playing guitar. He was ready to move on to the next thing.
Amazing.
So that's the only reason I want to invoke this guitar.
That's amazing. Like making
music is just such an amazing lifelong endeavor.
Absolutely.
Right. So that's why that guitar is special.
And that's like you just have to be interested too and bored kind of. I feel like that. My dad he's like taking an acting class right now, which is amazing.
That's awesome.
And like he did this whole, went to this show. My dad is that kind of guy through and through, and that's always really inspiring. He's just like doing so much stuff. I'm like, what do you mean? You work like a full-time job. You're doing like a cabaret show with like a bunch of people in Lawrence? What the hell?
That's so cool.
It's great.
I love that.
Yeah.
Creativity is not confined to just those who are getting paid to do it.
Definitely not. Yeah, I feel like if you kind of just keep banging away at it, suddenly you're like, oh.
There's a thing.
Oh, I got a little thing notched out for myself.
Well, let's keep it about me for a minute, because actually what I really want to talk about, he has a song called Charlie's Garden.
Yeah.
And it's another great example of incorporating references.
Certainly.
This one, there's some really on the nose that are a lot of fun. Let's check it out.
One more day in Charlie's garden. One more day in Charlie's garden. Oh, just one more day.
Yeah, I feel like listening to that right now, I hear the whirly in the pre-chorus is like Supertramp. That's their sound. It's full Mr. Blue Sky. McCartney, for sure. There's like that dong dong, this bell that we found at Electric Lady. Yeah, I feel like, and also, I kind of feel like, why aren't people don't make songs like that? Not to gas myself up, but it's like, why aren't people making kind of like fun sort of songs? Like fun, I don't know.
Yeah, okay, well, let's talk about the purpose of the song, and I want to talk about the influence, because you know, in a certain way, this is like just a fun, jaunty song.
Absolutely.
It serves almost like a Shakespearean comic relief in a...
Sure.
We've been dealing with lonesomeness. We've been dealing with some heavy emotions. Why do we need this jaunty song in the mix?
Well, if the song wasn't about Charlie,
It's not about me. It's about a much better Charlie. Tell me about the story of the song, I guess.
So the story of the song is I was at my friend Charlie's house, and we lived in Atlanta, and if this is my street, this is his street over here, and the yards combined. So I would like cross into his backyard, and he had a ping pong table. You go back there shirtless, drinking your coffee, you're just playing ping pong, or you're going like, there's a hot tub, it's amazing. It was like, wow, how did I end up here? And he had a piano at his house. We didn't have one at my house. And they were taking their dog, Penny, out to go like on a hike one day. And just a lazy sort of Sunday, you know, play. I wrote this, and then it's over, actually, on the same day. And, yeah, this was just one that is like an homage to my friend. And it felt like, what other reason is there to put a song on an album?
Oh, sweet.
And it kind of, I definitely was like, you can really hear the influences. I don't know if I should put this on this record. But I really like listening to this song, and it means something deeply to me. So I'm sort of like, well, let's just go with it. And to be honest, I haven't regretted it at all. I mean, my influences are my influences, and it's like a little tip of the cap. And it does serve, like, as you're saying, a little palate cleanser too, you know?
So your friend is Charlie Heaton. He's one of your co-stars in Stranger Things. Mm-hmm. He's featured here, that little spoken word moment.
Feet Charlie,
Charlie. It's very sweet. Sometimes I think it's fun to be honest about our influences. We definitely live in a moment where there are plenty of artists we'll talk to who will be like, I'm not going to say who I'm influenced by because then they're going to come at me. And that is a real thing.
You can definitely shy away from it, and I totally understand it. But everybody's got influences. And you listen to anybody's music, and you're like, you listen to that, don't you? And it's just like,
I mean,
I
hear Paul McCartney playing Penny Lane. And absolutely, I love that you have Penny the dog is quoted here. Oh, we got to hear the trumpet.
That's a high note. I did not play that note. We did this one, and it's over. In L.A., actually, because Jack has a studio in L.A. that he was kind of... Jack Antonoff, actually. We've been stealing his space for the better part of 2 years.
Very nice. You recorded Electric Lady in the space he's been recording out of.
Exactly. So we'll go into that room sometimes, but he's kind of like always in the building, and, you know, he's become a bit of a friend. And so we were out there just because we had these two extra songs. It was like, okay, let's work on these two songs. And a friend of a friend had played the trumpet. We said, hey, could you do this trumpet? And he did it from home and sent it in. We literally just put it on the track. And we're like, did it. Like, perfect.
But and it obviously evokes so many Beatles recordings where we get those trumpet solos.
Yeah, of course. And I love that. I love like a featured instrument that comes out of nowhere and just kind of lifts the whole song and transforms this section, because we're kind of like in this thing. We know what we're doing. And then we get to this section. It's sort of like kind of freaky. It's like a little circus-y. I think we even called it like circus or something in that part.
There's obviously, then we have the title, Charlie's Garden, reminds me of Octopus's Garden.
Of course.
It feels very sort of day in the life-y as well. Mm-hmm. But I think one of the things that makes it really different in owning your influences is you've actually come from a very different perspective. One of the things you did not shy away from your love of Paul McCartney. And one of the things I love about Paul, of all the things, is that he is not afraid to write fictional songs, totally create characters that never existed.
He's good at that.
And they become part of our lives. But you've actually done the opposite. You've taken like a very heavy influence, but then made something very, again, domestic, personal, about your friend.
Yeah.
A song about friendship.
Yeah.
Not enough songs about friendship.
Yeah.
I always like to note them.
Yeah. It's very easy to write like a love song, but it's very hard to write a song about not romantic love. Mm. I think also like Back on You, I feel like that way. A song about like my family and Crux as well. I mean, I guess we'll get to that one. But
this is exactly where I wanted to go. Let's keep going through this hotel of supposedly fictional rooms and characters that seem to be heavily based on your life.
Yeah.
Your song Back on You is a song that is a song about love, but it is not a romantic song. It is about just true, unconditional love. Let's take a listen.
Yeah. This song is another good example of like this is the first song we started. Mm. I had that first, there's no choir. I just had that, simple. It's like G to F, very simple. And, you know, kind of knew that like it would be really cool to do like a Thin Lizzy style, like sort of like rock track that is about that, which is like those things don't usually go hand in hand. Usually it's about like going out and really like looking for chicks. You know what I mean? So I had this like first verse pretty much, and it was like I knew the song was going to be important to me, and it fucked me. I was like stuck on the song for like a year and a half. Like I could not write the rest of the song.
You open, I've known my sisters for a lifetime. I count my lucky stars that I have them, in a Thin Lizzy background.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was just a, I guess, like, kind of down to the wire. I needed the pressure. I don't know exactly what it is that I needed, but we ended up, like, I kind of figured out what the choruses would be. So then my sisters did a bunch of background stuff for the record, and they came in and did all these gang vocals that you can hear throughout the record, and they, you know, punched all these things. So, but it was like, I kind of like wasn't, I was trying to like not play them that part, to like not cue them in. One of my sisters heard it though, but she kept it quiet. But yeah, it was like a song that I knew was kind of like a tent pole for the album for me. I was like, this is like, I don't know, it's like, again, super direct about the way that I feel about these people who, you don't say that stuff. Like, when was the last time you said something so like serious and direct to someone in your family? Like, thank God I have you. Like, I've laid down my life for you. Like, what other point is there for music, I guess, to like say these things that you'd like, to declare this thing.
You made a stadium rock anthem for your sisters.
For my sisters, yeah. And for my friends, too. And, I mean, and that's that was well. Actually sort of how the song was unlocked for me. It was like, it. I think I was focused on that, but then really also thinking about, like, who else is in my life? And it's my friends, my good pals and my buddies who, in times, you know, when times are tough, the people that you can, like, truly turn to.
You, back in, was it in college that you started Post Animal?
I didn't start it. I joined. I was just a waiter, and they needed a drummer, and I just was at the right place at the right time. I'm like, hey, you like Tame Impala? I like Tame Impala. Let's go. And I joined the band.
You were dressed in the new Tame Impala music video.
Yeah, of course.
So that's
that was crazy.
Dream realized.
That's like full, yeah.
But you had to leave the band. Your life got too busy.
Yeah.
Things happened.
Yeah.
But here's the band, Post Animal, playing with you, right?
Yeah. They're on all over this thing. Singing, doing different things. Jake, yeah, everybody.
So you're singing a song about how much I love you and you can lean on me.
I know.
And you can lean
it's
on
great. And it's like selfishly for me, that was the whole, like the best part of the experience. And like looking back, even listening to it now, I have like enough time away from it where it's like, oh, wow, I can't believe you did this. It's great.
How they feel about it?
Great, I think. I don't know. It's like, yeah, they love it.
It's kind of you're like with a little help from my friends, but with a Thin Lizzy vibe or something.
Yeah, exactly.
It's very sweet.
Yeah.
We got to continue this tour. There's let's two more stops we got to take.
Yeah, take me there.
Let's take a little detour, actually.
Okay.
Because we're nearly at the end.
Yeah.
But before we get to the end,
yeah,
we have to go to the beginning.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Lay it on me.
I'm a dad. I make podcasts. Puns are my life. I should start a coffee shop.
You should meet my dad. You should meet my dad.
I'll look up to him.
Yeah.
I have something to grow into. I want to go a detour into, there's been a bunch of new releases this week.
Yes, yeah.
I want to listen to the first one that came out, I believe, Monday.
Yeah.
Let's listen to Carry the Name.
Because it's pictures of you that I'm scared of. I try not to blame. I just carry the name. And rejection's a new with the new love. It's never the same. I just carry the name.
You know, also, bringing it back to the Beatles, it's like, you know, Paul McCartney is so inspired by like the standards of his day.
Oh yeah, it's all.
And in a way, the Beatles are just like the standards of our day, I guess. Mm. And so, how can you not sort of be inspired by it? I hear it on like listening to this right now on these speakers. Like, yeah, you definitely hear the.
I hear like the Moog synthesizer from "Here Comes the Sun" or something.
Yeah,
that little interlude. Yeah,
that's a little.
You take the time. We live in an era where a lot of folks write mostly loop-based music. Which is fine.
Which is what I've done mostly. Like, yeah. Decide for sure loop based.
But you've really take the time to write. I want to go to what the song is about. But
yeah.
You also write these like really lovely composed little instrumental sections to bridge us from place to place.
That's Mr. Jake Hirschland doing that with me. That little thing. Yeah, that was kind of like, reminds me almost of MGMT, like something that they might do. Just like an odd way to kind of, like I said, perk your, you're like, whoa, what was that? And then you never do it again. Yeah.
So I can't tell. Are we still in the hotel? Is this a continuation of the Crux? Why are we continuing here?
There's a lot of rooms in this building, man. There's a lot of rooms.
Tell me about this emotional journey. It's got this very funny chorus where it's got this very sort of joyful like feel.
Yeah.
Except you're singing, that's because like, it's pictures of you that I'm scared of. Yeah. I try not to blame. I just carry the name.
Yeah. You know, looking at pictures of your ex and being like, this is their new life and I have to just carry this around with me. And like, ah, oh, that hurts so bad, but I have to live with this.
How do you feel about the contrast between the sadness of the lyric and the joy of the music? What's that doing for you?
That's something that maybe comes naturally to me that I like to do, that the Strokes taught me well. I feel like they're just all about singing like really sad stuff to kind of like upbeat sort of poppy, happy music. And yeah, I like that contrast.
Hmm.
Yeah, because you kind of leave, it puts you in this place where you're like, you don't know how to feel. Mm. Or like you've been singing this song to yourself and then you're like, wait a second, what are the lyrics? Like, you know, you finally realize what it is that you've been singing. You're like, oh God.
Maybe it's like also trying to help us process what's going on there. Like the verse has this sort of descending minory kind of feel.
Yeah.
And then when we get to the chorus, like, oh.
Yeah.
It's maybe, okay. Maybe I'm going to get over it all.
Sucks. Yeah.
I'm still looking at these pictures. Yeah. I shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's almost poking fun at ourselves.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's many rooms. Let's go to the final room. Crux is the last room on the album.
Yeah.
And it's not the crux. It's just crux.
Yeah.
Right?
This is just crux. Yeah.
Just crux. Okay. Let's take a listen to Crux.
Let it out from inside me. Get it back to your heart. Get it back to your heart. Only if you give it back again. Get it back to your heart.
Oh, there's another one of those beautiful.
Mr. Adam, yeah, Mr. Adam.
Taking us on so many journeys throughout this entire album, but even the song, just from the first notes through the chorus, we have, it's like a full orchestra has joined us.
For sure. Like, I remember finding that patch, too. I wrote the song again in Atlanta. I was hanging out back in the garden, was chilling up there, and was like, oh, I think I have an idea. I'm going to go try to do this idea. Yeah, that string patch is on the Mellotron. I got all these expansion cards. I went and I bought this Mellotron from this guy and it smelled like weed. It just reeked, but I got a great deal. And I got all these expansion cards and the cards have all these different sounds. It's like Black Sabbath's FX and Yes. And so all these kind of like, whoosh, like crazy stuff. And there's this really nice string. So I was like, oh, this would be really cool to just like kind of make this section all about this instrument.
Hmm.
But it's a very simple song. You know, it's like, I think it's like the same chords is like Hungry Heart, you know, it's like basically everybody's written this song. But for whatever reason, to me that day, I was like, this is inspiring and new.
Why is it the finale? Why is it the crux? I mean, this is like, it's in a very important position on this album and it's saying something.
What yeah, telling I guess just it's kind of about getting back to your heart. No, like
that's the chorus. Get back to your heart.
Yeah, yeah.
Only if you give it back again, get back to your heart, will you give it back.
You kind of have to like repair yourself in order to sort of, you know, you have to work on yourself in order to be the best version of yourself to do good things for the world, maybe. Yeah, it kind of is like this big, long journey to take me to that realization. And also returning to your roots, your family, returning to your friends, you know. You may be hung up, you may be hurt by this gash in your life, but also scar to a seam. Use it, you know, use it as a way to move forward and maybe become a more true version of yourself than you were before. Maybe you were kind of like, yeah, maybe it's an opportunity rather than a setback.
As we've moved through this hotel,
yeah,
there has been a lot of progress that's happened. I mean, because if we go back to where we're, you know, we begin in lonesomeness, we go to sort of like snide, accusing folks of being basic, maybe looking at ourselves also of being like, who am I? What am I contributing to these like beautiful, I love my sisters, my friends matter to me. I want to just sort of speak from the heart. That's a major transformation that we've experienced.
Yeah. And I think like just being okay with the stuff that you're making too, feeling like, you know, I'm hearing my own influences on it or feeling like something's too simple or feeling like, is this line right? But just kind of being like, it is what it is. I made this. Here you go.
So where are you going to go from here musically, personally, after the crux?
We're going down.
Thank you to Joe Keery. Thank you to NYU. Thank you especially to Phil and Allison and all of the students who have helped make it possible. Thank you for bringing us all together, Joe. It has been an absolute pleasure.
As a student myself, it's so cool to do something like this, and I'm honored to be a part of it, so thank you for having me.
Round of applause for Joe.
Switched on Pop is produced by Raina Cruz, edited by Lisa Soap, engineered by Bill Lance, illustrations by Aras Gottlieb, theme music by Jossie Adams and Zach Tenari of Archivist, a member of the Vox Media Podcast Network and a production of Vulture, which is part of New York Mag. You can subscribe at nymag.com/pod. Hey, we dropped an episode on a Monday. I don't know if you recognize that. We have yet another episode coming out on Wednesday. We will be getting into the world of Demon Hunters. It is the most requested thing that has ever happened on our podcast. The Music Theory of Demon Hunters on Wednesday. Come check it out. Until then, thanks for listening.